I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On January 8th, the Heritage Foundation, the right-wing think tank behind Project 2025, released a 250-year roadmap to, quote, save America by saving the American family. Written by authors with close ties to the Trump administration, this massive document outlines a plan to subjugate girls and young women by pushing them out of college, forcing them into marriage and motherhood, and restricting their access to birth control. The plan says, in many respects, a strong family dependent on God and one another is itself a declaration of independence. It advances the cause of liberty by minimizing the need for government in daily life. The document then goes on to cite declining statistics about the percentage of married adults and the number of people having children. They write, quote, "This dramatic turn away from marriage and family formation has many causes, but two stand out. The first was Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty. The rapid growth of the welfare state incentivized unwed childbearing, imposed devastating financial penalties on low-income people who got married, and discouraged able-bodied people from working." I first learned about this plan in Jessica Valenti's newsletter, Abortion Every Day. In her piece called They're Coming for Our Daughters, she writes, "They want our daughters and granddaughters to have zero information about their bodies and sex, no ability to protect themselves from pregnancy, limited choices for an intellectual and professional life, and once our girls have been corralled into early marriages, few opportunities to leave." And let's be blunt, abortion bans and forced pregnancy were just the beginning. So how are activists responding? What can be done to push back against this? Jessica Valenti is a writer, activist, and author of 8 books, including the New York Times bestseller, Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Can Use to Win. A former columnist for The Guardian and The Nation, Jessica Valenti's pieces have appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, and many other publications. After the conservatives on the Supreme Court overturned Roe, Jessica founded Abortion Every Day, a newsletter dedicated to abortion rights. Hi, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, Jessica, I have to say, it is so hard to read your newsletter, but so important because so much is happening that I think people do not know about. And we'll talk about that later in the show. But I'm so glad that I ran across the email that you put out about this 250-year plan. I don't think I would have heard about it otherwise. How did you first learn about it?
You know, one of the things I'm doing at the newsletter is just trying to pay attention to every single thing that they are putting out, every single press release, every single document, because everything is so overwhelmed right now. Reporters are overwhelmed. Mainstream outlets are overwhelmed. And unfortunately, anything that has to do with women, with reproductive rights, really is falling through the cracks. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really doing my best to try to fill that gap wherever I can. But yeah, this did not get a lot of attention at all, unfortunately. And it's important because they're being really, really explicit about what their plan is for our daughters, for our granddaughters. And as you can see from the document, it is not positive.
Let's elaborate on that a bit, because when we did our Project 2025 series last year, a number of listeners said, there's no way they can do that in this country. It sounds like you're fear-mongering here. That can't happen in the United States. And well, we woke up and it's happening. And so I think the same thing is happening with abortion and basic rights. A lot of people did not think they would go so far as to overturn Roe, and they did. And the needle just keeps moving. So why do you think it's important to spend the time talking about a document like this that sounds like it comes out of The Handmaid's Tale? And a lot of people think, really, that could happen in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's these documents that are being so explicit that are one of the most important things that we can read, because they really are providing us with a roadmap, like Project 2025 was, with what they want to happen next. This is their wish list, right? And it's not pie in the sky, as we've seen from Project 2025. And a lot of what they are suggesting is sort of this slow roll chipping away approach, very similar to what we saw with abortion before Roe was overturned, like contraception, right? They're not going to turn around tomorrow and introduce a law that says contraception is illegal, but they are making contraception already harder and harder to obtain. They're making it harder for young people to obtain. I write in this piece, and I've written this before, I think one of the big major attacks we're going to see on birth control sooner rather than later, unfortunately, is that I think that Republicans will move to make birth control, hormonal birth control, illegal for minors, right? And so they are going to just continually do this chipping away approach, attacking the most vulnerable communities in the hopes that we're all going to be too overwhelmed to notice.
It's important to note that we're talking about an organization that is very well funded. In January 2024, Heritage put out a press release saying that it raised more money in 2023 than any prior year, surpassing $150 million in cash and commitments. They say that more than 500,000 people have donated to Heritage. According to SourceWatch, they're getting about $23 million overall from the National Christian Charitable Foundation. That's from 2013 to 2023. And then from 2012 to 2024, almost $15 million from the Sarah Scaife Foundation. So can you also tell us about how well-funded the Heritage Foundation is?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of conservative organizations, unfortunately, there is just a tremendous amount of money going into Heritage, going into other groups. You know, conservative billionaires really are behind the move to dismantle what's left of reproductive rights. And the other thing to remember is that it's not just the money, it is the influence and the power. We're talking about people with this document, for example, that have really close ties to the Trump administration. One of the authors was in the Department of Health and Human Services in the first Trump administration. Another author is working with the White House on policies to increase the birth rate. And so these are people who really do have a foothold in the administration. They have the power that they need and want to make these things happen.
To your point, Jessica, I was looking at the authors of this massive document, and it's not just white men. There's Emma Waters, policy analyst, and then you've got Roger Severino, vice president.
Yep.
And this is a guy I've never heard of before, Delano Squires. He is writing a book called The Vanishing Black. He's black. He's writing a book called The Vanishing Black Family, How Welfare and Feminism Made Marriage Optional and Children Vulnerable.
I did not know about that book, but that sounds right on right on cue. I mean, these really are the people who work at Heritage, the people behind this movement, are some of the most extreme folks that you can imagine, right? Some of the Heritage Foundation people went on to a different organization, for example, and they're behind the push to ban mifepristone. It's a very small world with a lot of these, you know, so-called policy analysts, with a lot of these authors. And again, I think what is so interesting is that they're not hiding it in the same way that they used to, right? They may try to smooth it over with nice words and nice language, but they're being very explicit about what they want, and they're counting on us being too overwhelmed to listen or to hear them or to really believe them. That's why I wrote about the document, and that's really why I'm just so obsessive about tracking this issue as much as I can every day, because it's just so incredibly important that we're not letting anything fall through the cracks.
And again, this is a massive, massive document. It is a 250-year roadmap to, quote, save America by saving the American family. And how they begin this document is just wild. So I'll just read this paragraph. On July 4th, Americans will remember how the founding fathers won their freedom and established ordered liberty through a system of limited government, federalism, and the rule of law. In understanding their crowning achievement, Americans must recognize that the founding fathers were quite literally fathers. 54 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence married and had a total of 337 children among them, an average of six each. So they're basically saying that the key to greatness is for more fathers, men in this country to be fathers and women to be moms. What are your thoughts about how they began this document?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's worth noting is that it's only specific people that they want to be parents, right? Mm. But they are really interested in straight married couples. There are whole sections of the document about why LGBTQ people shouldn't have kids. I mean, it's really just as regressive as you can possibly imagine. But yes, a huge portion of this document is about increasing the birth rate, having more children. And while it does open with fathers, the real like bulk of this document and the real bulk of the work that they're doing is about trying to encourage, promote, those are words that they would use, but really it's force women and younger women to have children. They are very, very sort of honed in and focused on the idea that young women, college age women, even younger, should be getting married and having children.
There's also just so many juvenile statements in this document. I am really thinking a lot about how the media are going to cover the 250th birthday of this country. And I think that Native voices are going to be missing. And so we're actually going to start a series next week called The U.S. at 250, A Native Perspective. And when I read in this document, for most of human history, marriage was accepted as the lifelong union of one man and one woman. Well, they clearly do not know the history of this country pre-European contact, because that just was not the case. I mean, so many tribes were matrilineal. Women had so many rights in so many tribes. And I gotta say, Jessica, it's juvenile and also just pretty insulting. I mean, they're just rewriting history in so many cases.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's 100% right. I mean, and we're seeing this not just with the country's founding, right? Like, even just a few decades back, they are trying to rewrite what life was like in the 1950s and 1940s, 1960s for women. This is very much attached to this broader cultural push towards traditional gender roles for women. It's attached to, I am sure that you have covered or talked about, the trad wife movement. It's about rewriting what the world looked like, what this country looked like for women when they had no rights, and trying to get young women specifically to buy into the lie that they are better off without working, that they are better off in the private sphere than the public sphere, that they are better off without education. So from beginning to end, they're rewriting history.
I think the other thing that's so disturbing about this is they talk about wanting to advance the cause of liberty by minimizing the need for government in daily life. They really go after people on welfare. They really trash people who are not working, even though we know that people with disabilities, elders, cannot work for a variety of reasons. And Jessica, I mean, you and I can spend the next hour just talking about how they've made life so difficult for moms with low wages, expensive childcare. I was even thinking about guns putting this show together, where more children are now dying from guns than anything else. And what does the Heritage Foundation say? Guns are not the problem, crime is. So there's so much here.
There's so much. And, you know, it's sort of like it's always been. They are interested in forcing birth, forcing childbirth. They are interested in more children. They are not interested in supporting those children. They're not interested in passing policies that actually help families. They're so concerned with, you know, convincing women to have more children, yet they're not willing to support any sort of policies like paid parental leave, subsidized childcare, right? Anything that would make families' lives easier, they have no interest in. And so it's just completely typical in a way, but also so disturbing in just how far they're willing to go, just how explicit they're willing to be about what they're really after. It goes to show, I think, just how emboldened they feel under this administration.
And they're in power. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's just a fact.
Today, we're speaking with Jessica Valenti, writer, activist, and author of 8 books, including her New York Times bestseller, Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. After conservatives on the Supreme Court overturned Roe, Jessica founded Abortion Every Day. This is such an important newsletter dedicated to abortion rights. That is how I learned about this new document from the Heritage Foundation. It's a 250-year roadmap to, quote, save America by saving the American family. And as Jessica points out, we have to talk about this because a lot of people were shocked. They didn't even know that Roe was overturned. People think that cannot happen here, but it is happening. And that is why we need to talk about these kinds of documents by the well-funded Heritage Foundation. If you have any questions or comments for Jessica about this document, about what their end game is, also what's happening at the state level. As she said, a lot of these stories are just not getting attention because we're just getting slammed every day with so much information. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's go to our first caller, John in Berkeley. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Rose. As a historian, you must note that this is an extension of the Great Replacement Theory, which is inevitable demographically. Mm-hmm. So they want to encourage births by white Christian nationalists. Keep the women. The subjugation of women was the original sin. Half of the world has been subjugated. But it's Dobbs. We must overturn Dobbs. They always said overturn Roe, we must overturn Dobbs. But it is an effort to encourage reproduction among a certain group. It's racist.
Well, thank you for the comment. I think this is so interesting, Jessica, because we talk about white Christian nationalists, but it seems like as long as you're on their side, you don't necessarily have to be white.
Right. I mean, especially they're looking for, and it's the same thing that we've seen with women in leadership positions at anti-abortion organizations, right? Mm-hmm. The people who are pulling the strings, the people who are largely making their world go round and funding all of this are older white men, but they understand that they need to make people feel like their movement is welcoming to everyone. And so, yeah, so long as you're sort of towing the party line, I think that they're okay. But I think John is absolutely right. You can't talk about what's happening with reproductive rights without talking about racism, without talking about the fact that they are very much not just looking to increase the birth rate, but looking to increase the white birth rate, right? And again, this is something that maybe is not explicit in this Heritage Foundation document, but everyone in their sphere is becoming much more explicit about it, much more open about that racism.
What concerns you the most right now, given that you follow this on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think for me, the thing that keeps me up at night, you know, there's so many attacks, there's so many policy attacks, there's so many cultural attacks. What worries me is that we are taking young women for granted, that Democrats, you know, mainstream Democrats are taking young women voters for granted and think that they will always be there. I really can't stress enough just how much money the conservative movement and Christian nationalists are spending to target younger women. The tradwife movement that I mentioned earlier, their indoctrination in schools, they're passing all of these laws that force anti-abortion propaganda into schools. This is a movement that knows they're not changing women's minds who are 30 years old, 40 years old, right? Even 20 years old. They are going after younger and younger women, recognizing that they need to indoctrinate them as early as possible. And they're doing it in school. They're doing it in church. They're doing it through policy, but they're also doing it through social media, through culture. And So the thing that really keeps me up at night, the thing I worry about, is that we are so used to young women being this strong demographic for Democrats. And I know Democrats are very focused on young men right now who are going down the right-wing pipeline, that they're sort of ignoring or taking for granted that young women will always be there. And I just don't think that that's the case.
What is the message they're sending to young girls and young women?
That their life can be better if they give up power, if they stay in the private sphere, right? And I hate to say it like this, but when this younger generation is so disillusioned with capitalism, with the job market, with the world, when politics is so awful, when the world feels so difficult, they're offering something seductive to girls and young women. They're saying, you actually don't have to worry about it. You can take care of your kids. You can stay at home. Someone else will worry about that. They're offering an alternative vision, an alternative life, right, for young women specifically who may be feeling disillusioned with what America is looking like right now. And so I do think that that is a message that could work, unfortunately. And they're also spending so much money, again, rewriting history about what that really looks like, right? Like, sure, it sounds very nice to have more time with your children. I think all of us would like more time with our children. All of us would like more time to cook and be together. But they're really papering over and they're really whitewashing what that means in reality, what that means for your rights, what it means when you can't get care at the hospital if you have a miscarriage. And what they don't want to talk about and what they really won't say to these women is that, you know, this movement isn't just connected to white supremacists and Christian nationalists. And it is connected to a growing sect of extremists who don't even want women to have the right to vote. And I know that that sounds so exaggerated or crazy. That is a growing movement. People are being more explicit about it. And I think we would really do well to understand that this is happening.
And they're reaching young people through social media. How else are they reaching them?
It's through social media, and I would say it's also it's through schools and peers. One of the legislative trends that I've been following is Baby Olivia legislation, and basically what this is legislation that requires public schools to show an anti-abortion propaganda video. And so they're getting them while they're young. This is coming at the same time that they are eradicating comprehensive sex education, replacing it with, you know, abstinence only, but also in a lot of these lessons are these lessons about traditional gender roles. And so they're looking as much as they can to sort of focus in on women and girls when they're very young. The other way that they're getting to girls and young women is through crisis pregnancy centers, right? Because of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, all of these Planned Parenthood clinics are shuttering, real reproductive healthcare clinics are shuttering across the country. And so there aren't any spaces for young women to go who need reproductive health care. And what Republicans are doing are populating all of these communities with anti-abortion crisis pregnancy centers, which are fake clinics, religious centers. And these centers are increasingly targeting younger and younger girls. They're giving out free physicals to middle schoolers and high schoolers for their sports teams. They're finding ways to get them in the dorm so that they can tell them contraception is bad for you. Being home is better. You don't want to work. I even got, as part of my work doing the newsletter, I found the audio of a state legislator in, I want to say, Kentucky, talking to a school board member, encouraging this school board member to implement classes that would teach girls that it's better not to go to college, but to stay at home, right? Wow. To teach girls sort of this like hyped up home ec about why they should want to be mothers. And so it really is everywhere.
Wow, you brought up so much there. I had never heard of this Baby Olivia Act. So this is a 3-minute video called Meet Baby Olivia. It was produced by the anti-abortion group Live Action, and they want to show this to students in grades 5 through 12.
Yeah, it really is. It's, you know, it is made to look, it is a video that they, it's a computer generated image that they've made to look as if it is actually, you know, an ultrasound or like a camera in the uterus. Of course, it is not. It has all sorts of misinformation and disinformation about pregnancy. It's really disturbing, but it's also really smart because they know that all these studies show that the more that young people especially know about pregnancy, the more they know the truth about pregnancy, the more likely they are to be pro-choice. And so they need to put a wrench in that. They need to stop that as early as possible and get that indoctrination in as early as possible. And so this is legislation that has been introduced, I want to say, in over a dozen states. It's certainly been passed in quite a few. And it's just one piece, right? It's just one piece of this massive legislative agenda to focus in specifically on girls and teenage young women. Hmm.
Well, we're going to take a quick break today. We are spending the hour with Jessica Valenti, a writer activist, author of 8 books, including Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. After the Supreme Court conservatives overturned Roe, Jessica Valenti founded Abortion Every Day. It's such an important newsletter dedicated to abortion rights. And I learned about this Heritage plan in her newsletter in a piece called They're Coming for Our Daughters. She writes, they want our daughters to have zero information about their bodies and sex, no ability to protect themselves from pregnancy, limited choices for an intellectual and professional life. And once our girls have been corralled into early marriages, few opportunities to leave. We're talking about the Heritage Foundation's new 250-year roadmap to, quote, save America by saving the American family. It's really not getting that much media attention at all. I see Ms. Magazine, Newsweek, a couple of like a Baptist News Global, AP Fact Check, the Virginia Independent, USA Today. Other than that, not much. So if you have any questions for Jessica about what is in this and what is happening across the country around abortion rights, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. A couple articles on her newsletter right now. Tennessee gubernatorial candidate wants death penalty for abortion patients. South Carolina is investigating a 13-week miscarriage. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Laura Malden will discuss her new book, In Sickness and in Health, Love Stories from the Front Lines of America's Caregiving Crisis. She writes about becoming a full-time caregiver to her partner at such a young age, only 27, and shares stories of couples navigating similar challenges. She says, we have to reimagine our care systems so no one is left to care for a loved one alone. We hope you can join us tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email your call at kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation with Jessica Valenti, we're talking about the Heritage Foundation's brand new 250-year roadmap to, quote, save America by saving the American family. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. I learned about this plan in Jessica Valenti's newsletter, Abortion Every Day, which is such an important newsletter dedicated to abortion rights. Jessica Valenti is a writer, activist, author of 8 books, including Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. So again, to go back to this document that is so, so extensive, they talk a lot about welfare. In one of their sections, Stop Punishing Family Formation, they write, the welfare state kickstarted the current crisis by punishing work and marriage. The welfare system has made marriage economically irrational for many low-income couples. Nearly all of the cash, food, and housing programs focus on subsidizing non-married single-parent families with the greatest benefits aimed at families that do not work. Can you talk about why they write so much about welfare and social programs?
Sure. I mean, the point here is that they don't want money going to unmarried women and unmarried women with children, because they want women to be financially dependent on men, right? Like, they would like that money to go towards marriage promotion programs, to go towards, again, in quotes, encouraging marriage, encouraging childbirth. They do not want women to have the ability to fare well, succeed, pay their bills, without a husband. I think it really comes straight down to that.
And yet, when we look at what this administration and what mostly Republicans have done to social services, in February, the administration said it was freezing $10 billion in child care and child welfare funding for five Democratic-led states. They previously attempted to withhold funds or cancel Head Start, which provides free child care for kids five or under from low-income families. I mean, we can go on and on with these social program cuts.
Yeah, and I think the point about childcare is really important as well, because this is another way to force women back into the home. The idea is to make childcare impossible for people to get, to make it too expensive, to make it too inaccessible, so that women are forced to stay in the home and forego work, forego the public sphere to take care of children. And again, if they had programs that made work-life balance easier, that made that had parental leave, that made it easier to work and maybe even work less and have children for both parents, I think people would take them up on that. But they're really just interested in this very narrow, very extreme gender roles.
And you're reminding me, Jessica, we did a show about this many years ago, that we almost got universal child care back in 1971. But a number of hard right Christians who had a lot of power in government said they didn't want the government to take care of their children. And so it didn't pass.
Right. Because they want their wives to take care of children. Right. Like, it really is. It's almost depressing in its simplicity, but it really just is that. They really just do believe that women should be in the home. And again, one of the things that worries me so much is that cultural message really is being spread far and wide on social media without any sort of historical information or context about what that really looks like.
Mm. Well, let's take a few more callers. Let's go to Angeline in Sonoma. Hi, Angeline. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. My question is very simple. How do they treat the current lack of fertility in both men and women in this country these days?
Mm. That's a terrific question, because it's something that, you know, RFK Jr. has spoken a lot about. It's something that the White House is obsessed with, is increasing the birth rate. What is so fascinating to me, because the people at the Heritage Foundation and behind this movement are against IVF, right? They're against fertility treatments. They're focusing in on a lot of sort of nonsensical, non-medical solutions. One of the things that they're pushing for the most is something called restorative reproductive medicine. And it's RRM. And what they mean by that is treating what they call root causes. So they're saying, you know, if you are not able to have a child, and it's primarily directed at women, it's because you have too many toxins in your body. It's because your food isn't, you know, quote unquote, clean. Your water isn't clean. And so it's very Make America Healthy Again coded, everything that they're doing there. And really, it's a way to distract from the fact that they don't want IVF to be legal.
Hmm. They also really do acknowledge the fertility problems and crisis in this country. And they write, couples who marry earlier in their early 20s are more fertile and tend to have more children than those who marry later. As a consequence, if more people marry earlier, that will likely boost the married fertility rate and alleviate the social problems described in this report.
Exactly. And that's exactly why they are pushing for young women to forego college and to get married and have children instead. And I should say, you know, the other major part of this, because we know what happens when people get married before they're ready and if they're too young, they want to make it as difficult as possible for women to leave marriages. They want to end no-fault divorce. They want to populate family courts with judges who don't believe in divorce. And so they really are focused on getting those young women, getting girls into marriages, into motherhood, and making it impossible for them to leave.
Can you tell us more about this, getting rid of no-fault divorce?
Yeah, I mean, it really is as simple as that. They don't want, they would like women especially to have what they call like a good reason, right, to leave a marriage. They don't want you to be able to leave a marriage just because the relationship is over, you don't want to be married. They would like people to have to prove abuse, to really go through it, to really jump through a number of hurdles in order to get that divorce.
Wow. If you want to check out this document, it's very long. You can find it at KALW.org, click news and your call. Today we are talking about the Heritage Foundation's new 250-year roadmap to, quote, save America by saving the American family. We're talking about it with Jessica Valenti. She writes the very important newsletter, Abortion Every Day. She's a writer, activist, author of many books, including Yes Means Yes, Visions of Female Sexual Power, and A World Without Rape. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. I also just want to mention, it's so important to talk about this because the needle continues to move. And as Jessica writes, let's be blunt, abortion bans and forced pregnancy were just the beginning. Let's go to our next caller, Maurice in Oakland. Hi, Maurice.
Hi, good morning. The response to a problem is only as good as the description. These people are fanatical religious fascists. Call them for what they are. They want to repeal the 20th century, especially post-60s consciousness-raising reality. And the best solution is to attack them for their strength. They're no better than religious zealots and fascists in Russia, Israel, or Afghanistan. They are, regardless of your religion, they are religious fanatics. And the more often they're described as such, the better off we'll all be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maurice. To Maurice's point, Jessica, we also have a number of emails saying, what is the most effective way to push back against this?
I mean, there's so many things that we should be doing. And I think that Maurice is right that naming this for what it is incredibly important. And I think one of the ways that we can do that, and something that I focus a lot on in the newsletter, is the way that this is being treated as like a both sides issue, right? Both sides media, both sides journalism, when we're talking as if this is normal, right? We're giving a platform to people in various articles, you're giving them quotes, and you're treating this like this is normal everyday stuff, or like they are just one side of a debate. They're not. Women are dying. Women are dying of sepsis. They're losing their organs. They are forcing children into childbirth. Children are breaking their pelvises in childbirth. I mean, it is, what is happening is obscene. It is not normal. And the sooner that we can demand that our local outlets, that our national outlets reflect that, I think the better off that will be. And I think in terms of what else we can do, we can make sure that our legislators know that we're paying attention. Again, so much of what they're doing really does depend on us being too overwhelmed to act. They think that we are, and they are inundating us, right? They want to inundate us into inaction. They think we're not going to notice what they're up to. A big part of what I'm doing at the newsletter is trying to make sure that none of those bills slip through the cracks, none of those cultural electoral campaigns know documents like this slip through the cracks, so that if something comes up in your state, if a bill comes up in your state, like one of the Baby Olivia bills we were talking about, that you know exactly what it is, that you know what they are trying to do, what certain words mean, what certain language means, so that you can contact your legislators and show up and really do something.
To your point about what is happening right now, this is just so devastating and important to talk about. You and what you're doing with your team at Abortion Every Day are on this, and ProPublica is also on this. They reported on C.G. Graham, a mom of a 2-year-old boy who died of heart failure while waiting for an abortion in North Carolina. Tierra Walker, a mom of a 14-year-old boy who died of preeclampsia after doctors told her she did not need an abortion for her high-risk pregnancy in Texas. Nevia Crane, an 18-year-old who died of sepsis following, quote, fetal demise while waiting for an abortion in Texas. I mean, Jessica, these stories are absolutely devastating, but because we're inundated, it's so easy to miss them.
Yeah, and I think what's also important to know is that that's just the tip of the iceberg. The stories that we hear about, and ProPublica does an incredible job with this, but the stories that we hear about, that is a small, small percentage. I cannot tell you how many more stories that I have gotten that, you know, when you sort of explain the consequences of coming forward, or there are a lot of stories out there. And I think anyone who works on this issue, any abortion rights activist, anyone who works for an abortion fund or an abortion organization will tell you that there are so many of these stories. And even if it's not women dying, it's women suffering. I spoke to a young woman who was denied treatment for her ectopic pregnancy, and she lost both of her fallopian tubes, right? Yeah. Like, this is happening right now. This is happening every single day. And because these are medical traumas, it's not, and because they're private and it feels very private, people are not necessarily coming forward, or they don't know how to come forward. But I think that you're right, because we're so overwhelmed, not just with what's happening to abortion rights and women in this country, but what's happening in general. It's very easy to sort of check out or to become numb to it. And it's so incredibly important that we don't, and that we don't let this become normalized. You mentioned one of the, you know, the articles, one of the stories that we wrote about this week is a Republican running for governor in Tennessee wants to punish women with the death penalty. Over a dozen states in the last year have introduced legislation that would do just that, that would punish abortion patients as murderers, that would give them life in prison or the death penalty. I'm writing about yet another bill in Kentucky. There's another one in Tennessee. This is becoming normalized, and you barely hear about it. You barely hear about it. You certainly don't hear about it in most national media, but you barely hear about it in state media, outside of public media, honestly. And it's so incredibly important that people understand that this is not a fringe effort anymore. This is the mainstream of the anti-abortion movement. This is the future of the anti-abortion movement.
It's also important to remember that abortion is now illegal in 13 states. According to the Center for Reproductive Rights, it's hostile in 12, not protected in 5, protected only in 15 states. And I often think about these young girls and women, Jessica, who are having children they don't want, that they can't afford, and we're hardly hearing about their stories. And it's got to be happening every single day in this country.
That's exactly right. And I think that is the other thing that we don't talk nearly enough about, because understandably, we are talking about the women who have died. We're talking about the women who have had severe medical traumas because of these laws. But there is a whole other, you know, group of women who are being forced to parent, who are being forced into childbirth. That is a violation of their freedom. That's a violation of their bodily autonomy, of their personhood. We can't lose sight of that too, that we are eradicating freedom for women in half of this country.
We have a couple of emails from listeners. Art wants people to know about a screening on Monday night called Crossing State Lines for Abortion Access, short films and panel discussion, March 6th at 6 p.m. at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco. Thank you so much, Art. Chris writes, can you address the concurrent thread connecting the misogynistic revelations of the Epstein files and this new manifesto from the Heritage Foundation? Unfortunately, some of the same players seem to be contributors. Any thoughts on that, Jessica?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the connective tissue is just that power and control and not seeing women and girls as full human beings, right? And I think that the other thing to remember is when you have conservative policies like this, when you have policies that remove sex education, that remove information about abortion or reproductive rights from public spaces, not just from schools, but from websites, right? You are creating a culture that makes it easier to abuse girls and women. If young girls, if teenagers don't know anything about their bodies, if they have not been taught anything, if they've been taught that sex is shameful, they are much less likely to seek out help. They're much less likely to know what is happening to them, right? And so all of those things are connected in addition to the sort of like patriarchal, misogynist power and control that happens with all of those issues.
And Chris, since you brought up the Epstein files, we did a show about this yesterday. We did not mention this new NPR report. I need to read this, but I do want to read just the beginning. This is from NPR yesterday, actually, by Stephen Fowler. The DOJ has withheld some Epstein files related to allegations that Trump sexually abused a minor, according to an investigation. It also removed documents from the public database where accusations against Epstein also mentioned Trump. So we're going to read this, and if you want to find it, you can do a search online, because this definitely, I hope more people are investigating this. In our final moments, Jessica, I just wonder how you do this every day, because in the piece that I read about this Heritage Foundation plan, you started off by talking about an experience your 15-year-old daughter had. By some administrative fluke, she ended up in a class where she was the only girl. Oh, I'm sorry, she's not 15. She was surrounded by, or is your daughter 15?
She is 15. You got it
right. Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. So I remember you sharing your pregnancy story that, wow, the time just goes by. So she was surrounded by a dozen or so 15-year-old boys. And you write, in the year 2026, in a progressive Brooklyn high school, my daughter had to listen to her classmates joking about rape. These are boys she thought were her peers and friends, some of whom she's known since preschool. So it's so fascinating, Jessica, that you have a 15-year-old daughter now who had to listen to her, the friends in school joking about rape, and then putting this newsletter together on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's what inspired me to do that particular article, honestly, because I could see if this is happening in a progressive school in Brooklyn, where boys have clearly been influenced by this sort of misogynist online culture that really is proliferating. I can't imagine what it's like in other states, in other communities. And when you have the powers that be, when you have, you know, well-funded organizations like the Heritage Foundation really backing up that dehumanization and that misogyny, or even just what happened with the U.S. men's hockey team, right? Like, it's that constant chipping away at our daughter's sense of selves that is now backed up by policy, by government power, by this administration. And so it's, in terms of how I write about it, I don't have a choice because I do have a 15-year-old daughter and it is necessary. I think like a lot of people who do this work, I cannot imagine doing anything else. I think that there are so many people, especially in the abortion rights community, who are just rising to the occasion because that's what the moment requires.
Hmm. One final question. Someone just called in and said, where the F are the Democrats?
let me know if you find out. You know, I think one of the biggest problems that Democrats have with this particular issue is that they continue to be apologetic and defensive, and they are sort of stuck in this mindset of abortion being controversial, right? They have not been fully convinced, for whatever reason, that this is a overwhelmingly pro-choice country. This is not, we don't have a small majority, we have a vast majority. 81% of Americans do not want the government involved in abortion in any way. 81% of Americans do not want this issue legislated at all. That is a winning issue, that is a powerful issue. And yet, almost everything that Democrats do really comes from this place of defensiveness, apologeticness, and really the moment calls for something much, much bigger and much more courageous than that. Hmm.
Jessica Valenti is a writer, activist, and author of 8 books, including the New York Times bestseller Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and The Truths We Use to Win. After the conservatives on the Supreme Court overturned Roe, Jessica founded Abortion Every Day, a newsletter dedicated to abortion rights. And that's how I learned about the Heritage Foundation's new 250-year roadmap to, quote, save America by saving the American family. Jessica writes, let's be blunt, abortion bans and forced pregnancy were just the beginning. Jessica, huge thanks for your important work. Honestly, I don't know if I probably would have run across it eventually, but thank you for the work that you're doing. It matters so much. Thank you for joining us, and we'd love to have you back.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. And you can find Jessica's work and this Heritage Foundation roadmap at kalw.org. Click news and your call. We also had a question from a couple of listeners who wanted us to repeat information about the films that are happening. Thank you for this. So these are films about abortion access crossing state lines, Monday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco. We'll also put a link at kalw.org. Click news and your call. Thanks to Nina Kissinger for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And I hope you can join us tomorrow. Laura Malden will discuss her new book, In Sickness and in Health. She writes about the caregiving crisis and says no one should have to do this alone.